11.
Oddly, it was Allende's simple ingenuousness that first led me to befriend him. I employed him as an assistant during his first months in the Grand City. For the second time in 2 days, Ellen stood atop the Luthadel city wall, studying an army that had come to invade his kingdom. Ellen squinted against the red afternoon sunlight, but he was no tin eye. He couldn't make out details about the new arrival. "Any chance they're here to help us?" Ellen asked hopefully, looking toward Clubs, who stood beside him. Clubs just scowled.
"They fly Set's banner. Remember him? Guy who sent 8 Allomancer assassins to kill you 2 days back?"
Ellen shivered in the chill autumn weather, glancing back out over the Second Army. It was making camp a good distance from Straff's army, close to the Luth-Davin Canal, which ran out the west side of the River Chanarel. Vin stood at Ellen's side, though Ham was off organizing things among the city guard. Orsir, wearing the wolfhound's body, sat patiently on the wall walk beneath Vin.
"How did we miss their approach?" Ellen asked.
"Straff," Clubb said. "This Set came in from the same direction, and our scouts were focused on him. Straff probably knew about this other army a few days ago, but we had virtually no chance of seeing them."
Ellen nodded. "Straff is setting up a perimeter of soldiers watching the enemy army," Vin said. "I doubt they're friendly to each other." She stood atop one of the sawtooth parapet crenels, feet positioned dangerously close to the wall's edge.
"Maybe they'll attack each other," Ellen said hopefully.
Clubs snorted.
"I doubt it. They're too evenly matched, though Straff might be a little stronger. I doubt Set would take the chance by attacking him."
"Why come then?" Ellen asked. Clubs shrugged.
"Maybe he hoped he'd beat Venture to Luthadel and get to take it first."
He spoke of the event, the capture of Luthadel, as if it were a given. Ellen's stomach twisted as he leaned against the battlement, looking out through Merlin. Vin and the others were thieves and Ska Allomancers, outcasts who had been hunted for most of their lives. Perhaps they were accustomed to dealing with this pressure, this fear, but Ellen was not. How did they live with the lack of control, the sense of inevitability? Ellen felt powerless. What could he do? Flee and leave the city to fend for itself? That, of course, was not an option. But confronted with not one but two armies preparing to destroy his city and take his throne, Ellen found it hard to keep his hands steady as he gripped the rough stone of the battlement.
"Kelsier would have found a way out of this," he thought.
"There!"
Vin's voice interrupted Ellen's thoughts.
"What's that?"
Ellen turned. Vin was squinting, looking toward Set's army, using tin to see things that were invisible to Ellen's mundane eyes.
"Someone's leaving the army," Vin said. "Riding on horseback."
"Messenger?" Clubs asked.
"Maybe," Vin said. "He's riding pretty fast."
She began to run from one stone tooth to the next, moving along the wall. Her Chandra immediately followed, padding quietly across the wall beneath her. Ellen glanced at Clubs, who shrugged, and they began to follow. They caught up with Vin, standing on the wall near one of the towers, watching the oncoming rider. Or at least Ellen assumed that was what she watched. He still couldn't see what she had.
"Allomancy," Ellen thought, shaking his head. Why couldn't he have at least ended up with one power, even one of the weaker ones like copper or iron?
Vin cursed suddenly, standing up straight.
"Ellen, that's Breeze."
"What?"
Ellen said.
"Are you sure?"
"Yes. He's being chased. Archers on horseback."
Clubs cursed, waving to a messenger.
"Send riders. Cut off his pursuit."
The messenger dashed away. Vin, however, shook her head.
"They won't make it in time," she said, almost to herself. "The archers will catch him, or at least shoot him. Even I couldn't get there fast enough, not running. But maybe...
Ellen frowned, looking up at her. Vin, that's way too far to jump, even for you.
Vin glanced at him, smiled, then leaped off the wall.
Vin readied the 14th medal, Duralumin. She had a reserve, but she didn't burn it. Not yet.
I hope this works, she thought, seeking an appropriate anchor.
The tower behind her had a reinforced iron bulwark on the top. That would work. She pulled on the bulwark, yanking herself up to the top of the tower. She immediately jumped again, pushing herself up and out, angling into the air away from the wall. She extinguished all of her metals except for steel and pewter. Then, still pushing against the bulwark, she burned Duralumin. A sudden force smashed against her. It was so powerful she was certain that only an equally powerful flash of pewter held her body together. She blasted away from the keep, hurtling through the sky as if tossed by some giant, invisible god. The air rushed by so quickly that it roared, and the pressure of sudden acceleration made it difficult to think. She floundered, trying to regain control. She had, fortunately, picked her trajectory well. She was shooting right toward Breeze and his pursuers. Whatever Breeze had done, it had been enough to make someone extremely angry, for there were a full 2 dozen men charging after him, arrows knocked. Vin fell, her steel and pewter completely burned away in that single Duralumin-fueled flash of power. She grabbed a metal vial off her belt, downing its contents. However, as she tossed the vial away, she suddenly felt an odd sense of vertigo. She wasn't accustomed to jumping during the day. It was strange to see the ground coming at her, strange not to have a mist cloak flapping behind her, strange not to have the mist. The lead rider lowered his bow, taking sight at Breeze. Neither appeared to have noticed Vin, swooping down like a bird of prey above. Well, not exactly swooping. Plummeting. Suddenly snapped back to the moment, Vin burned pewter and threw a coin toward the quickly approaching ground. She pushed against the coin, using it to slow her momentum and to nudge her to the side. She hit right between Breeze and the archers, landing with a jarring crash, throwing up dust and dirt. The archer released his arrow. Even as Vin rebounded, dirt sprang around her, she reached out and pushed herself back into the air straight at the arrow. Then she pushed against it. The arrowhead ripped backward, throwing out shards of wood as it split its own shaft in midair, then smacked directly into the forehead of the archer who had released it. The man toppled from his mount. Vin landed from her rebound. She reached out, pushing against the horseshoes of the two beasts behind the leader, causing the animals to stumble. The push threw Vin backward into the air, and cries of equine pain sounded amid the crash of bodies hitting the ground. Vin continued to push, flying along the road just a few feet above the ground, quickly catching up with Breeze. The portly man turned in shock, obviously stunned to find Vin hanging in the air beside his galloping horse, her clothing flapping in the wind of her passage. She winked at him, then reached out and pulled against the armor of another rider. She immediately lurched in the air. Her body protested the sudden shift in momentum, but she ignored the twist of pain. The man she pulled against managed to stay in his saddle, until Vin smashed into him feet first, throwing him backward. She landed on the black earth, the rider tumbling to the ground beside her. A short distance away, the remaining riders finally reined in their mounts, coming to an abrupt stop a few feet away. Kelsier probably would have attacked. There were a lot of them, true, but they were wearing armor and their horses were shod. Vin, however, was not Kelsier. She had delayed the riders long enough for Breeze to get away. That was enough. Vin reached out and pushed against one of the soldiers, throwing herself backward, leaving the riders to gather their wounded. The soldiers, however, promptly pulled out stone-tipped arrows and knocked their bows. Vin hissed in frustration as the group took sight.
Well, friends, she thought, I suggest that you hang on tightly.
She pushed slightly against them all, then burned Duralumin. The sudden crash of force was expected. The wrench in her chest, the massive flare in her stomach, the howling wind. What she didn't expect was the effect she'd have on her anchors. The blast of power scattered men and horses, throwing them into the air like leaves in the wind.
I'm going to have to be very careful with this, Vin thought, gritting her teeth and spinning herself in the air. Her steel and pewter were gone again, and she was forced to down her last metal vial. She'd have to start carrying more of those. She hit the ground running, pewter keeping her from tripping despite her terrific speed. She slowed just slightly, letting the mounted breeze catch up to her, then increased her pace to keep up with him. She dashed like a sprinter, letting pewter's strength and balance keep her upright as she paced the tiring horse. The beast eyed her as they ran, seeming to display a hint of animal frustration to see a human matching it. They reached the city a few moments later. Breeze reined in as the doors to Iron Gate began to open, but rather than wait, Vin simply threw down a coin and pushed, letting her forward momentum carry her toward the walls. As the gates swung open, she pushed against their studs, and this second push sent her sailing straight up. She just barely crested the battlements, passing between a pair of startled soldiers, before dropping over the other side. She landed in the courtyard, steadying herself with one hand against the cool stones as Breeze entered through the gate. Vin stood. Breeze patted his forehead with a handkerchief as he trotted his animal up beside her. He'd let his hair grow longer since she'd last seen him, and he kept it slicked back, its lower edges tickling his collar. It wasn't graying yet, though he was in his mid-40s. He wore no hat, it had probably blown free, but he had on one of his rich suits and silken vests. They were powdered with black ash from his hurried ride.
"Ah, Vin, my dear," Breeze said, breathing almost as deeply as his horse. "I must say, that was a timely arrival on your part. Impressively flamboyant as well. I do hate to force a rescue, but, well, if one is necessary, then it might as well happen with style."
Vin smiled as he climbed down from the horse, proving he was hardly the most adroit man in the square, and stable hands arrived to care for the beast. Breeze wiped his brow again as Elland, Clubs, and Orsure scrambled down the steps to the courtyard. One of the aides must have finally found Ham, for he ran up through the courtyard. "Breeze," Elland said, approaching and clasping arms with the shorter man.
"Your Majesty," Breeze said. "You are in good health and good humor, I assume?"
"Health, yes," Elland said. "Humor? Well, there is an army crouching just outside my city."
"Two armies, actually," Clubs grumbled as he hobbled up.
Breeze folded up his handkerchief.
"Ah, and dear Master Cladent, optimistic as always, I see."
Clubs snorted. To the side, Orsure padded up to sit next to Vin.
"And Hammond,"
Breeze said, eyeing Ham, who was smiling broadly.
"I'd almost managed to delude myself into forgetting that you would be here when I returned."
"Admit it," Ham said. "You're glad to see me."
"See you, perhaps. Hear you, never. I had grown quite fond of my time spent away from your perpetual pseudo-philosophical pratterings."
Ham just smiled a little broader.
"I'm glad to see you, Breeze," Elland said. "But your timing could have been a little better. I was hoping that you would be able to stop some of these armies from marching on us."
"Stop them?" Breeze asked. "Now why would I want to do that, my dear man? I did, after all, just spend 3 months working to get set to March's army down here."
Elland paused, and Vin frowned to herself, standing just outside the group. Breeze looked rather pleased with himself, though that was admittedly rather common for him.
"So, Lord Set's on our side?" Elland asked hopefully. "Of course not," Breeze said. "He's here to ravage the city and steal your presumed atium supply."
"You," Vin said. "You're the one who's been spreading the rumors about the Lord Ruler's atium stash, aren't you?"
"Of course," Breeze said, eyeing Spook as the boy finally arrived at the gates.
Elland frowned.
"But why?" "Look outside your walls, my dear man," Breeze said. "I knew that your father was going to march on Luthadel eventually. Even my powers of persuasion wouldn't have been enough to dissuade him. So I began spreading rumors in the Western Dominance, then made myself one of Lord Set's advisers.
Clubs grunted.
Good plan. Crazy, but good.
Crazy, Breeze said. My mental stability is no issue here, Clubs. The move was not crazy, but brilliant.
Elland looked confused.
Not to insult your brilliance, Breeze, but how exactly is bringing a hostile army to our city a good idea?
It's basic negotiating strategy, my good man, Breeze explained as a packman handed him his dueling cane taken off the horse.
Breeze used it to gesture westward toward Lord Set's army.
When there are only two participants in a negotiation, one is generally stronger than the other. That makes things very difficult for the weaker party, which in this case would have been us.
Yes, Elland said. But with three armies, we're still the weakest.
Ah, Breeze said, holding up the cane. But those other two parties are fairly even in strength. Straff is likely stronger, but Set has a very large force. If either of those warlords risks attacking Luthadel, his army will suffer losses, enough losses that he won't be able to defend himself from the third army. To attack us is to expose oneself.
And that makes this a standoff, Club said.
Exactly, Breeze said. Trust me, Elland, my boy. In this case, two large enemy armies are far better than a single large enemy army. In a three-way negotiation, the weakest party actually has the most power, because his allegiance, added to either of the other two, will choose the eventual winner.
Elland frowned.
Breeze, we don't want to give our allegiance to either of these men.
I realize that, Breeze said. However, our opponents do not. By bringing a second army in, I've given us time to think. Both warlords thought they could get here first. Now that they've arrived at the same time, they'll have to reevaluate. I'm guessing we'll end up in an extended siege, a couple of months at least.
That doesn't explain how we're going to get rid of them, Elland said.
Breeze shrugged.
I got them here. You get to decide what to do with them. And I'll tell you, it was no easy task to make Set arrive on time. He was due to come in a full 5 days before venture. Fortunately, a certain malady spread through camp a few days ago. Apparently, someone poisoned the main water supply and gave the entire camp diarrhea.
Spook, standing behind Clubs, snickered.
Yes, Breeze said, eyeing the boy. I thought you might appreciate that. You're still an unintelligible nuisance, boy.
Wasing the where of not, Spook said,
smiling and slipping back into his eastern street slang. Breeze snorted.
You still make more sense than Hammond half the time, he mumbled, turning to Elland. So isn't anyone going to send for a carriage to drive me back to the palace? I've been soothing you ungrateful lot for the better part of 5 minutes, looking as tired and pathetic as I can, and not one of you has had the good graces to pity me.
You must be losing your touch, Vin said with a smile.
Breeze was a soother, an allomancer who could burn brass to calm another person's emotions. A very skilled soother, and Vin knew of none more skilled than Breeze, could dampen all of a person's emotions but a single one, effectively making them feel exactly as he wanted.
Actually, Elland said, turning and looking back up at the wall, I was hoping we could go back up on the wall and study the armies some more. If you spent some time with Lord Set's force, then you could probably tell us a lot about it.
I can. I will. I am not going to climb those steps. Can't you see how tired I am, man?
Ham snorted, clapping Breeze on the shoulder and throwing up a puff of dust.
How can you be tired? Your poor horse did all the running.
It was emotionally exhausting, Hammond,
Breeze said, wrapping the larger man's hand with his cane.
My departure was somewhat disagreeable.
What happened anyway? Vin asked. Did Set find out you were a spy?
Breeze looked embarrassed.
Let's just say that Lord Set and I had a
falling out.
Caught you in bed with his daughter, eh? Ham said, earning a chuckle from the group.
Breeze was anything but a ladies' man. Despite his ability to play with emotions, he had expressed no interest in romance for as long as Vin had known him. Doxson had once noted that Breeze was just too focused on himself to consider such things. Breeze simply rolled his eyes at Ham's comment.
Honestly, Hammond, I think your jokes are getting worse as you age. One too many hits on the head while sparring, I suspect.
Ham smiled, and Elland sent for a couple of carriages. While they waited, Breeze launched into a narrative of his travels. Vin glanced down at Orsure. She still hadn't found a good opportunity to tell the rest of the crew about the body change. Perhaps now that Breeze was back, Elland would hold a conference with his inner circle. That would be a good time. She had to be quiet about it, since she wanted the palace staff to think she'd sent Orsure away. Breeze continued his story, and Vin looked back at him, smiling. Not only was Breeze a natural orator, but he had a very subtle touch with allomancy. She could barely feel his fingers on her emotions. Once she had found his intrusions offensive, but she was growing to understand that touching people's emotions was simply part of who Breeze was. Just as a beautiful woman demanded attention by virtue of her face and figure, Breeze drew it by near unconscious use of his powers. Of course, that didn't make him any less a scoundrel. Getting others to do as he wished was one of Breeze's main occupations. Vin just no longer resented him for using allomancy to do it. The carriage finally approached, and Breeze sighed in relief. As the vehicle pulled up, he eyed Vin, then nodded toward Orsure.
"What's that?"
"A dog," Vin said.
"Ah, blunt as ever, I see," Breeze said. "And why is it that you now have a dog?"
"I gave it to her," Elland said. "She wanted one, so I bought it for her."
"And you chose a wolfhound?"
Ham asked, amused.
"You've fought with her before, Ham," Elland said, laughing. "What would you have given her? A poodle?"
Ham chuckled.
"No, I guess not. It fits, actually.
Though it's almost as big as she is,"
Clubs added, regarding her with a squinty-eyed look. Vin reached down, resting her hand on Orsure's head. Clubs did have a point. She'd chosen a big animal, even for a wolfhound. He stood over 3 feet tall at the shoulder, and Vin knew from experience how heavy that body was.
"Remarkably well-behaved for a wolfhound," Ham said, nodding. "You chose well, El."
"Regardless," Breeze said, "can we please return to the palace? Armies and wolfhounds are all well and good, but I believe supper is more pressing at this point."
"So why didn't we tell them about Orsure?" Elland asked as their carriage bumped its way back toward Keep Venture. The three of them had taken a carriage of their own, leaving the other four to follow in the other vehicle. Vin shrugged. Orsure sat on the seat across from her and Elland, quietly watching the conversation.
"I'll tell them eventually," Vin said. "A busy city square didn't seem the right place for the revelation."
Elland smiled.
"Keeping secrets is a hard habit to break, eh?"
Vin flushed.
"I'm not keeping him secret, I'm just..."
She trailed off, looking down.
"Don't feel bad, Vin," Elland said. "You've lived a long time on your own, without anyone to trust. Nobody expects you to change overnight."
"It hasn't been one night, Elland," she said. "It's been 2 years."
Elland laid a hand on her knee.
"You're getting better. The others talk about how much you've changed."
Vin nodded.
"Another man would be afraid that I'm keeping secrets from him, too. Ellen just tries to make me feel less guilty."
He was a better man than she deserved.
"Condra," Ellen said. "Vin says you do well at keeping up with her."
"Yes, your majesty," Orsure said. "These bones, though distasteful, are well equipped for tracking and quick movement."
"And if she gets hurt," Ellen said, "will you be able to pull her to safety?"
Not with any speed, Your Majesty. I will, however, be able to go for aid. These bones have many limitations, but I will do my best to fulfill the contract.
Elend must have caught Vin's raised eyebrow, for he chuckled.
He'll do as he says, Vin. The contract is everything, Mistress,
Orsier said.
It demands more than simple service. It requires diligence and devotion. It is the Chandra. By serving it, we serve our people.
Vin shrugged. The group fell silent, Elend pulling a book from his pocket, Vin leaning against him. Orsier lay down, filling the entire seat opposite the humans. Eventually, the carriage rolled into the Venture courtyard, and Vin found herself looking forward to a warm bath. As they were climbing from the carriage, however, a guard rushed up to Elend. Tin allowed Vin to hear what the man said, even though he spoke before she could close the distance.
Your Majesty,
the guard whispered.
Our messenger reached you then?
No, Elend said with a frown as Vin walked over. The soldier gave her a look, but continued speaking. The soldiers all knew that Vin was Elend's primary bodyguard and confidant. Still, the man looked oddly concerned when he saw her.
We don't want to be intrusive, the soldier said. That's why we've kept this quiet. We were just wondering if everything is all right.
He looked at Vin as he spoke. What is this about? Elend asked. The guard turned back toward the king.
The corpse in Lady Vin's room.
The corpse was actually a skeleton. One completely picked clean, without a hint of blood or even tissue marring its shiny white surfaces. A good number of the bones were broken, however.
I'm sorry, mistress,
Orsier said, speaking low enough that only she could hear.
I assumed that you were going to dispose of these.
Vin nodded. The skeleton was, of course, the one Orsier had been using before she gave him the animal body. Finding the door unlocked, Vin's usual sign that she wanted a room cleaned, the maids had entered. Vin had stashed the bones in a basket, intending to deal with them later. Apparently the maids had decided to check and see what was in the basket and been somewhat surprised. It's all right, Captain, Elend said to the young guard, Captain Demu, second in command of the palace guard. Despite the fact that Ham shunned uniforms, this man seemed to take great pride in keeping his own uniform very neat and smart.
You did well by keeping this quiet, Elend said. We knew about these bones already. They aren't a reason for concern.
Demu nodded.
We figured it was something intentional.
He didn't look at Vin as he spoke.
Intentional, Vin thought. Great. I wonder what this man thinks I did.
Few Ska knew what Chandra were, and Demu wouldn't know what to make of remains like these.
Could you dispose of them quietly for me, Captain? Elend asked, nodding to the bones.
Of course, Your Majesty, the guard said.
He probably assumes I ate the person or something, Vin thought with a sigh. Suck the flesh right off his bones. Which, actually, wasn't that far from the truth.
Your Majesty, Demu said, would you like us to dispose of the other body as well?
Vin froze.
Other one?
Elend asked slowly. The guard nodded.
When we found this skeleton, we brought in some dogs to sniff about. The dogs didn't turn up any killers, but they did find another body. Just like this one. A set of bones, completely cleaned of flesh.
Vin and Elend shared a look.
Show us, Elend said.
Demu nodded and led them out of the room, giving a few whispered orders to one of his men. The four of them, three humans and one Chandra, traveled a short distance down the palace hallway toward a less used section of visitors' chambers. Demu dismissed a soldier standing at a particular door, then led them inside.
This body wasn't in a basket, Your Majesty, Demu said. It was stuffed in a back closet. We'd probably never have found it without the dogs. They picked up the scent pretty easily, though I can't see how. These corpses are completely clean of flesh.
And there it was. Another skeleton, like the first, sitting piled beside a bureau. Ellen glanced at Vin, then turned to Demu.
Would you excuse us, Captain?
The young guard nodded, walking from the room and closing the door.
Well, Ellen said, turning to Orsieur.
I do not know where this came from, the Chandra said.
But it is another Chandra-eaten corpse, Vin said.
Undoubtedly, mistress, Orsieur said. The dogs found it because of the particular scent our digestive juices leave on recently excreted bones.
Ellen and Vin shared a look.
However, Orsieur said, it is probably not what you think. This man was probably killed far from here.
What do you mean?
They are discarded bones, your majesty, Orsieur said. The bones a Chandra leaves behind.
After he finds a new body, Vin finished.
Yes, mistress, Orsieur said.
Vin looked at Ellen, who frowned.
How long ago? He asked. Maybe the bones were left a year before by my father's Chandra.
Perhaps, your majesty, Orsieur said.
But he sounded hesitant. He patted over, sniffing at the bones. Vin picked up one herself, holding it to her nose. With tin, she easily picked out a sharp scent that reminded her of bile.
It's very strong, she said, glancing at Orsieur.
He nodded.
These bones haven't been here long, your majesty. A few hours at most. Perhaps even less.
Which means we have another Chandra somewhere in the palace,
Ellen said, looking a bit sick.
One of my staff has been eaten and replaced. Yes, your majesty, Orsieur said. There is no way to tell from these bones whom it could be, since these are the discards. The Chandra would have taken the new bones, eating their flesh and wearing their clothing.
Ellen nodded, standing. He met Vin's eyes, and she knew he was thinking the same thing she was. It was possible that a member of the palace staff had been replaced, which would mean a slight breach in security. There was a far more dangerous possibility, however. Chandra were incomparable actors. Orsieur had imitated Lord Renu so perfectly that even people who'd known him had been fooled. Such talent could have been used for the imitation of a maid or a servant. However, if an enemy had wanted to get a spy into Ellen's closed meetings, he would need to replace a person far more important.
It would be someone that we haven't seen during the last few hours, Vin thought, dropping the bone.
She, Ellen, and Orsieur had been on the wall for most of the afternoon and evening, ever since the end of the assembly meeting, but the city and palace had been in chaos since the Second Army had arrived. The messengers had had trouble finding Ham, and she still wasn't certain where Doxon was. In fact, she hadn't seen Clubs until he'd joined her and Ellen on the wall just a bit before, and Spook had been the last to arrive. Vin looked down at the pile of bones, feeling a sickening sense of unease. There was a very good chance that someone in their core team, a member of Kelsier's former band, was now an imposter. The end of part 1.